Bandwidth for the iPhone LA podcast is provided by CacheFly at cacheFly.com. This is the iPhone LA podcast, episode 29 for November 18th, 2008. The guys from Brightkite. The iPhone LA podcast is brought to you by Audible. For your free audiobook, check out audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. So it is time for the iPhone LA podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and this is the show that discusses all things iPhone. Tonight, we have a special panel of guests with us, starting off from the Mac Observer. Jeff Gamet's here. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going for you tonight?
Going really well. I'm drinking a sugar-free Rockstar right now.
Sweet.
So I'm doing very well. You just had something today. You're kind of loose and ready for action. Do you want to share?
Sure.
If you don't have to, we can cut this out. We have editing. No, I mean, I won't edit it out, but I mean, I'll tell you.
That's how it's supposed to work. You make me feel really comfortable. I'll tell you anything.
Yeah.
You lie to me and then you put it in the show.
We're not even recording.
Right. All right. So for everyone playing at home, yes, I went and had acupuncture for the first time today. And dude, I am so mellow right now.
That's great. So, yeah, there we go. And also with us from the MacCast, Adam Christensen's here. Hello, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty good tonight.
Fantastic. Thanks for joining us. And special guests tonight from Brightkite, Martin May and Brady Becker. Hello, guys.
Hey. Hello.
How you guys doing?
Doing great. Just, relaxing after a long day of work.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us on such short notice. I tried sending off an email, but it came down to just kind of calling you up at the last minute, and I'm glad it worked out. I'm glad to have you guys on here, because we talk about Brightkite every other week, it seems, on the podcast. So I think we're all big fans of the Brightkite. So we're really happy to have you on. I should just mentioned that my friend Pilot Omar is here also. He's my co-pilot, so he's just going to be here and chime in. So, hey, Omar.
Hey, Michael, give me just a second. I got to check in at your house on Brightkite.
There you go. I haven't checked in either. Check in for me. Okay, so let's... Martin and Brady can't stay here for the entirety of the show, so we're going to ask them a couple questions. So I think starting off, could you guys explain a little bit about what Brightkite is and how it works?
So Brightkite is a location-based social network. It's mostly based around the places that you go. So with Brightkite, you can check in at physical locations that can be, something as granular as your local coffee shop, but it can also be as coarse as maybe like at a country level. For example, you're in Italy, so you check in Italy. And what Brightkite lets you do once you're checked in is you can see who else is around you. You can browse profiles of nearby users. You can browse profiles of people who have been at the place that you're at. You can interact with these people, like you can do in normal social networks. You can do double blind messaging, that kind of thing. You can also leave photos and what we call notes, which are just basically very, very short messages at the place that other people can then see. The effect of all of that is basically that you can meet people around the places that you go and that you're at. And some of the other secondary features of Brightkite are that you can also see where your friends are at. So you can kind of like keep tabs on what they're doing. Very similar to what Twitter does, but with location components. And I guess that's kind of like the high level overview. There's a lot more to it than that, but that gives you a basic idea.
Yeah. So I know I asked you this before, just because we couldn't hear you before. What was your inspiration for creating Brightkite?
So the reason why we created Brightkite is, we were not very happy with the existing social networks, because for us, social networking has always been most interesting when it's actually local. That means when it's like with people that we can actually meet in real life. And social networks like Facebook and MySpace especially, and even Twitter, didn't do a very good job of enabling these local interactions. So we were using Twitter for quite a while, and you know, we would go to, like, for example, local meetups, and it would be a bunch of Twitter users. Everybody would be sending out tweets about the meetup, but there was no real good way of aggregating everything just based on the place where you're at. I think nowadays people are using things like hashtags, but it feels really tacked on. It's really, you know, it's really not a good way for actually aggregating location information. And so we came up with Breadcake.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I don't even know what the hashtags are. I just kind of let other people do them, and, you know, I don't even pay attention to it. So, but, you know, the really cool thing, I with Twitter, I think maybe a year ago, I sent out a Twitter saying, you know, I don't have a ride home or something like that. And it was the coolest thing when, you know, I got, you know, two responses from people saying, well, I can give you a ride home. And these are, you know, people that I know who are local. And that's when it really, you know, clicked for me, the ability to actually interact with people who are within your social network and, you know, even accomplish things through it. And so that's why I really like Breadcake. And so I guess I was just going to say, ask you what you think the benefits of location-based social networking are, but I think you kind of went over that. Basically, you know, being able to interact with people who are within the social network and, you know, actually possibly meet up with them. So I guess the scenario would be, you know, I'm at the coffee shop and I check in and, you know, Joe sees that, you know, you're at the same coffee shop and you can say, hey, I do the same, you know, I do the Breadcake thing too. Or maybe he's, you know, at a store that's a few blocks away and he'll just come in and, you know, say, hey, or something like that. There are a lot of other location-based social networks out there that are, you know, popping up all the time. What are the advantages, do you think, to Breadcake as opposed to the others? Because I know I definitely like Breadcake much more than a lot of the other ones. I can't really put my finger on why. What in your opinion differentiates Breadcake from the other ones, and what your perspective on it is as opposed to what everyone else is doing?
So in our opinion, there are quite a few differences. I think the term location-based social network is still kind of like vague. If you take certain apps, there are a lot of apps that started out as friend finders that basically just show you where your friends are at. Loopt is an example of that. For you, they're pretty big, but they really started out just mostly focused on where are my friends at. Whereas Breadcake really started out with a different goal in mind. What we wanted to do, we wanted you to connect with people that you didn't know already, based on the places that you go, and you know, not just be able to see where your friends are at and that kind of stuff, and meet up with your friends. So there's a differentiator there. I think some of the other social networks are starting to go a little bit into that direction. Another big part of Breadcake is what we call location tagging. Which is like leaving photos and notes and things like that at places, which is really interesting because it creates this what we like to call virtual layer on top of the real world that is invisible to people who are not in the know, who have never heard of Breadcake. But the people who do know, they, for example, might go into a bar and they might know that, you know, the bartender with the long hair, his name is Jordan, you know, and he might give you a discount if you mention like somebody's name. You know, it's kind of like it feels kind of like an insider culture. I don't know if you've read the book Spook Country by William Gibson. Have you guys heard of that?
I haven't.
Okay, so it's a book that kind of like explores the aspect of location as kind of like a virtual layer on top of the real world, and it's pretty interesting. But to come back to the differentiators, I think some of the other differentiators we have are that we approached our location-based social network from a pretty device-agnostic standpoint. I know that you guys are mostly interested in the iPhone stuff, but Brightcat actually works on pretty much any phone that can do text messaging. It's not as nice as being as using the iPhone app, but it definitely works. We thought that was important because we felt if it's going to be a social network, all of your friends should be able to use it, and not just the friends who are on a certain carrier or who have a certain device. So that was very important to us. Our stuff is available internationally, something that a lot of the other location-based social networks don't have. I think some of them are only available in certain select cities, which really limits the usefulness. And some, I don't know, I could go on and on here. I think we just have a very very unique perspective on how we approach things, and other people are trying it in different ways, and our way has been working pretty well for us. You know, case in point, our privacy controls. We spend a lot of time working on those, trying to, you know, find a good mix between simplicity and flexibility. What you see nowadays is what we came up with, and we're still actually working on improving that. And I think a lot of people like that.
Yeah, and I should throw in there, I had a friend who sees that I'm using Brightkite all the time, but you know they've always just said, you know, it sounds like, you know, it's for stalkers. And she actually wanted to know, what are you guys doing to prevent random kidnappings? You mentioned that with the privacy controls. I remember when you rolled out the ability to actually specify individual places as private places, so you can then go on, you know, in a public mode, so you can, you know, go different places, and for the most part, people will know where you are. But for example, you know, when I check in at home, it knows this is a private place. So then it just kind of goes more general. And I really like that feature. So you can specify any, it's any place mark, right? You can specify as a private place.
Yeah, you can basically specify at any place that instead of having to manually switch between private and public modes, that's one thing you can do in Brightkite, where in public mode, pretty much anybody can see where you're at and what you're doing. And which is great when you're like out and about, you know, where there are a lot of people, for example, at a conference, or, you know, you're just like going out to some restaurants in town. Then public mode is a great option. But when you're, for example, visiting your grandma, then you probably don't want to disclose her address to the world, you know, or your home address, like you mentioned. So that's when you can switch into private mode, and really that's kind of like a secondary layer of security right there, because really the primary layer, which we think is really the most important one, is that our software doesn't really track you. A lot of people, when they first hear about Brightkite, they're like, well, I don't want to be tracked all the time. You know, that's like totally Big Brother and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And while we could make it work so it actually automatically tracks you, we've actually tried to stay away from that, and we've made it so that you actually explicitly have to check in, and that can be as easy as just pushing a button. We think it's very important that people are in control over when they disclose their location, and it's not just something that just happens automatically. Some of our competitors have taken the opposite approach, and some people like that better because it's definitely easier, but mm-hmm. we think control is more important. We might in the future introduce something to appease the users who want to be tracked all the time. We might let them do this, but that's definitely not going to be the default setting ever in our service.
Possibly even something where you can say, if I'm at a specific place, automatically check in there, but in other cases don't. Something like that, even, you know, kind of the opposite of what you're doing right now with the privacy control with individual place marks. You guys announced a while ago, I think when the App Store was initially launched, that you would have the Brightkite app, and you decided to wait for a while to really perfect the application. And when it, you know, finally did hit, we were all very excited about it because it's first of all, it's a very beautiful application. It looks very good. And it works very well too. And it really has all the really relevant things that, you know, a Brightkite application should. So I guess my question would be, what are your plans for the iPhone application, and what do you see that you want to, you know, kind of add to it or maybe tweak about it, or if you can answer that question?
Well, there are quite a few things. I can't really talk about all of them, but I can give you some ideas about some of the upcoming things. Probably the number one thing that we got from users. Well, right now, first of all, you cannot sign up for the service through the iPhone app. There's a reason for that, and it's because we wanted to make sure that the sign-up process is really clear, that people understand their privacy options. And for those of you who are not familiar with Brightkite, we're still in private beta. That means you actually have to get invited to the service to be part of it. The next version of the iPhone app that's coming out here real soon is going to let you sign up through the iPhone app without having an account on Brightkite.com first. We thought that was very important, so people could just download it from the App Store and can just get going. And in conjunction with that, we thought it was very important that people can find other users that they might know that are already on Brightkite, so they can discover their friends that are already on Brightkite. So we're integrating some features into the upcoming update for our app that will make that very, very easy. Let's see, what else? We've heard from a lot of people that the first user experience is that, well, nobody's around me. In my nearby stream, nothing is showing up. And often that's because 4 kilometers, which is really the maximum radius you can set right now in the app, is just not big enough for certain areas. If you're out in the middle of nowhere, in the countryside, you know, 4 kilometers might not be a big enough radius to actually see other people nearby. So we're increasing that radius by quite a bit. You're going to be able to see what's going on around you up to 100 kilometers around you. So that's quite a lot bigger. Let's see. Then we're also we're actually simplifying a lot of things. So this next release is really going to be what we like to call a polished release. It's simplifying a lot of the functionality. I think a lot of people didn't understand what, for example, the auto guess or play snapping button does. It's that button in the middle on the IM screen, mm-hmm. between the find me and the pick a place. Lots of people told us, I have no idea what that thing does. And while it had a pretty specific purpose, we actually found a way to get rid of that and still retain most of the functionality and actually make it more intuitive. And there are lots of little things that we polished around the app like that. So those are kind of like the high level features of the upcoming release. But then we also have some, I could say, secret features that we're working on that are going to be pretty kick-ass. That involve things such as, I don't know, Brady, can I talk about this?
I don't know.
It has something to do with barcodes, I can say.
Very cool. That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It will be very fun.
So you mentioned that, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, there's not a lot of people, you know, in my area. It's not, you know, very interesting for them to use Brightkite. And we kind of have that problem in our area, Rockford, Illinois. There are a few people who are using Brightkite, and I think there have been a couple more who've popped up. What are you doing as far as like maybe providing incentives or features or advantages to using Brightkite? You know, right now you have the ability to obviously post a photo, you know, and that's kind of different than, you know, just simply doing it with like Twitterific, let's say. So posting a photo, you can hook it up to Twitter, and then that actually goes out to Twitter. So you can say, you know, you can leave a comment with the link, you know, to that photo, and that photo is actually location-based because you did it from Brightkite. That's I think I now always use Brightkite for posting photos from my iPhone because it has that extra layer of, you know, location awareness to it. Sometimes I'll also post notes from Brightkite because I know they're going to go out to Twitter. So I'll say, you know, this movie is great or something like that if I'm at the movie theater. Are you guys thinking about, you know, what kind of ideas do you have or how are you getting the word spread and, you know, more people involved in Brightkite who don't kind of understand the idea of, you know, why they would want it?
So we have quite a few things that we're working on. I can't talk about all of them, but I'll talk about one feature in particular that you're going to see pop up here real soon. We think it's going to be pretty big. It's what we call the Brightkite wall, and you might be thinking, oh, what does that mean? So the Brightkite wall is something that every place in Brightkite is going to have what we call the Brightkite wall, and it's going to show everything that's going on around that place. And it's something that you can blow up full screen. So you can like have it projected on the wall at a, you know, at a meetup, or you can have it running on a TV screen in your at your coffee shop. It shows everything that's going on at that place. And more importantly, it actually lets people participate right then and there, and they don't need to have a Brightkite account up front. They can either, you know, if they have an iPhone, they can just get started with the iPhone right away and participate in Brightkite. If they don't have an iPhone, if they just have text messaging, they can just get started right there, there and then, and basically have something to that wall. It will appear right away, and an account will be created for them on the fly. So we think that's gonna actually gonna incent a lot of people to actually try Brightkite, because we're basically capturing users out in the real world, and it's not just, you know, insider geek, you know.
So this,
look for that stuff.
So this is something that actual establishments would put up on like a display.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
Okay, cool.
Very similar to what you might have seen at conferences. You know, Twitter has done this a few times, but ours is different because it picks up everything that's going on around that place, and it lets people sign up right then and there.
That's interesting. So it would also have a.
Sorry.
No problem. You would also have. I'm guessing the ability, just maybe like a computer sitting there next to the wall or whatever, where people could check in there, or would they have to have their own device to do it?
We designed it so that they can just do it from their own device. But, as I said, you know, any phone that has text messaging can do it.
Right. Very cool. That sounds like it'll be an interesting idea. Omar has a question for you guys.
Yeah, I'm not sure actually what the inside structure as to how it finds the places is, but if there is a place, let's say I'm at a new coffee house or something, and it's just not found in the listing, is there a way that like we could add this place?
Well, so there isn't an easy way to do that right now, because our place data actually relies on local search data. We use a large part of Google's database. We also use a couple of other things. I mean, the short answer to your question is that it's currently not very easy to add new places, but we're adding that ability probably, and then in the next couple of months, you're going to be able to do that. We just want to make sure we get it right, because it's somewhat tricky to do that without ending up with like a million duplicate places that are really one and the same, and or like having people enter a bunch of places that don't really exist.
Right.
So we have some ideas around that, and we just want to make sure we get it right.
So am I right in thinking that the best way to kind of work around that problem right now would probably be to use placemarks? So then the place snapping would kind of pick up on that at least in the iPhone application. And you know, if you're checking in from your computer or whatever, you can just say, you know, check in at, you know, Meg's or whatever, Meg's Coffee Shop.
Yeah.
So I guess
yeah, that's correct.
I should probably quickly explain what a placemark is. It's just basically if you check in at, 122 Main Street, every day, it would be easier to just say check in at work or something like that. So basically you type that in there, you add that as a placemark. So it's kind of a shortcut, but it also adds the ability to, add privacy to that place if you want to. But it's, also more functional, especially in the iPhone application. If you are within, a certain distance from that particular placemark, it will actually snap to that placemark and then check in from there instead of just kind of checking in from a kind of a vague intersection or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. It's actually, it works slightly different. The place snapping that you mentioned actually works on any place that you visited before. So you don't need to place mark a place for place snapping to work.
Oh, cool.
If you always check in at a certain coffee shop and you haven't created a place mark for it, we will actually figure out, when you're near that coffee shop in the future to snap to it. So it's actually a little bit easier than, having to create a place mark. The place marks really initially were made to basically serve as bookmarks for places, hence place marks, and basically give people who check in using text messaging a way to check in, in a much more convenient and quicker way, instead of having to type, at, like some really long address. They could just send us a text message and say, at work.
Right,
and
gotcha.
It's the equivalent of doing the address. Mm-hmm. That was the original idea behind placemarks.
Okay.
And that's really all it does right now. I think a lot of people think that placemarks are a lot more complicated, but really all the stuff that you mentioned, the place snapping and the place privacy, all that stuff just operates on any place. You don't need to have a placemark in order for that to work.
Gotcha. And I know this is kind of a sensitive subject for any, Web 2.0 company. Do you have any plans for monetization with Brightkite? I heard rumors a while ago that you might consider doing like a pro subscription to Brightkite. Do you have any news on that? Or
yeah, sure. I'd be happy to go over some of the things that we do. We're actually pretty open with how we're going to monetize it because I think we have a pretty good idea of how it's going to work. The obvious way that anybody in the location-based social networking market wants to monetize their services, obviously location-based advertising. We know that people are at a certain place, hence we can provide very, very targeted ads to them. That's one of the areas that we're going to explore. That's a pretty boring area, actually, because everybody's doing it. One area that we're much more excited about is what we call location-based analytics. We're getting so much data, public data from people who are in public mode about the places that they go and trends and things like that, that we can actually compile statistics. We basically remove all the personally identifiable information from that data, and then we can aggregate it based on place, So we can provide, for example, a restaurant owner with data that tells him, like, people who come to your restaurant also go to these six other places. They tend to come back every couple of weeks. Before they come to your restaurant, they come from this event center, and afterwards they go to this nightclub. Excuse me. So all that kind of stuff.
Gotcha. That's very cool. It's very exciting. In fact, the location-based just advertising in general, I think, because Google obviously does the AdSense or the AdWords and all of that, AdSense, I guess it is, which is of course based on what the content is that you're reading. So it's more relevant. And I think that the big problem with advertising is that it's just pretty irrelevant, as it is to most people. And there's a lot of targeting that goes on in that. But, I think that location-based advertising is a very exciting market because you can say, oh, you're near a pizza place, and it can say, hey, there's, are you hungry? Have a Pizza Hut, So I think that's very
cool. Yeah, exactly.
And I don't know, would that be like an optional thing in Brightkite when you do have that set up? Like, I don't know, for the iPhone app at least. I guess you could do that without a big obstruction on the website. Or do you have any idea how you'd implement that?
Yeah, absolutely. It would be very unobtrusive. The way we're going to do it, we're going to do it very similar to what Twitterific is doing now, where basically the apps are going to be inserted inside of your streams. So you're not going to get alerted or something, when you don't want to. It's not going to be above the real content. It's just going to be in the stream. And we're going to make sure it's really, really relevant to the user. And so, yeah, that's basically it.
Gotcha. I guess one final question from me, and then maybe the other guys can jump in and ask a question. Do you have any, and this is, of course, future stuff, but do you have any future plans for Brightkite besides what you mentioned as far as, possibly adding advertising to that or, anything you want to mention that you're planning for Brightkite?
Sure, yeah. One thing, coming up in the future, you'll actually be able to build applications inside of our shell, so similar to Facebook, but instead of leveraging the social graph, you'll be able to leverage a user's location. So things such as location-based games, location-based reminders, things like that. Stuff that falls outside of the core functionality, users will be able to add on as they please. So that's sort of where we're heading.
Okay. Quick question. Regarding Apple's push notifications, the rumored push notifications that will probably never show up, are you guys planning to have push notifications for check-ins and that sort of thing in Brightkite when those are available?
Yep, as soon as that's available, that's something we're going to implement.
Fantastic! I think that'll be really help with Brightkite as it is now because it's kind of you can turn on, SMS alerts or you can turn on email alerts, and that works okay. But I think that, once, that's available and people start seeing, hey, this person is near you or checked in near you, that'll really help push Brightkite along for people who do download it and, try it out for a week and, they're not sure about it. So, yeah. Do you... Go ahead.
Yep. It'll also help keep our SMS costs down.
Yeah.
SMS is expensive, so
we're looking forward to Apple releasing that very, very soon, we hope. But who knows?
Yeah. All right. So, Jeff, Adam, do you guys have any questions?
Well, I have a question somewhat related to that, and it goes back to your guys developing the iPhone app. As you mentioned, you're on multiple platforms. It's not just about the iPhone. But I'm curious because it did take you a little while to get the iPhone app out. I'm assuming it's because when it came out, it was pretty near perfect. And then I noticed real recently after that, you pushed a pretty big update. So you were obviously developing it very quickly. But what are you finding? How is the iPhone app being adopted compared to other platforms?
It's being adopted really well. I think the iPhone has been the first platform where we were able to really kind of push the envelope and really make it very, very user-friendly because we had access to the GPS and all that stuff. And I think most people who start using the iPhone app actually keep using it. And a lot of people who started using it on SMS, maybe dropped off after a little while because they found it too cumbersome to always check in via SMS. But there's also a lot of people who use it via SMS every day, and they think it's actually pretty easy. And it's actually pretty funny because here within the company, we actually had some bets going, like how long it would take us to start using the iPhone app ourselves. Because we were so used to using it via SMS, we're so proficient with that we're actually a lot faster doing it via SMS. And I think some of us still are. And we actually fall back to SMS every once in a while. So I don't know. It's hard to tell. But I think, you know, like our iPhone app is definitely currently our flagship client. And we have some pretty interesting stuff coming up for Androids, for the Google phone as well, which I think will push the envelope maybe even more.
So, Adam, Jeff, or well, I guess Jeff, because Adam just asked a question. Do you have any questions?
Sure. I have a question about privacy in Brightkite. And actually, this will be specifically about on the iPhone. So one thing I've noticed, and by the way, thanks for writing the app for the iPhone. It totally rocks. I'm really enjoying it. But my question about that is, let's say that you decide you want to really keep as much information about your location private as possible. Like you want to just let everyone know what city you're in and nothing else. And you want to enter that information yourself. Is there a way you can actually disable the request that the Brightkite app has to use the iPhone's built-in GPS? Or do you still have to leave the GPS on all the time?
Right. So that's actually that was another feature that was often requested with the first version, because in the first version, you actually can't get past that prompt to, you know, basically enable location services. If you deny that request, it basically keeps asking you again and again. And I assume that's what you're talking about.
Right.
The reason why that's actually working like that in the first version, because we didn't really think about it, because Brightkite, even if the location service is on, that does not mean like automatically it's going to send your location up to Brightkite. It's only going to do that if you actually check in, which is, you know, like pushing another button. That's why we didn't think it was a big deal. But we do realize that that a lot of people, first of all, don't know about that. And second of all, you know, there's also the battery factor that, you know, like if you have the GPS and all that stuff enabled, it drains your battery faster. So in the update that's coming up, you're actually going to be able to disable that and still use the app. And actually, one of the features that that we're pretty proud of is that you can actually lie about your location in Brightkite. You don't have to be at the location that you check in at. So that's actually a pretty big privacy feature in our opinion, because you can really throw people off, and some people are having lots of fun with that thing. So you can go to like pick a place, and you might be here in Denver, and you just type in Paris. Or even like Starbucks in Paris, and you pick a Starbucks and you just check in there, that's all perfectly valid, and that actually works right now too, even if you have the location service enabled. But hopefully that update is going to address that that concern you mentioned.
Cool. Now, since you guys are in Denver, I'm in Denver also. We should get together sometime. I'd love to meet you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that'd be great.
Sure. Come on by.
Okay.
Cool. I'll drop by.
You know where we are, right?
Yeah. You always know where we are.
As a matter of fact, I do.
See, I'll drop the. I'll drop the Brightkite name so you can follow them on Brightkite. I guess brightkite.com/people/hero HIRO. That's Martin's and. Brightkite.com/people/Brady is Brady's. So you can follow them on Brightkite. Now, when someone requests to add to friends, if you ignore that, are they alerted to the fact that you ignored them in the sense that they can't watch you, or can they still watch you even if you ignore that request?
So when you ignore the request, they are not notified. We would send like a notification that would say, well, so-and-so, you know, deny your friend request. And I guess some people found that very harsh. So you know, it was kind of like, you know, shooting the messenger kind of scenario. So we decided we disabled that. So they can, they cannot follow you. You know, they cannot have your stuff appear in their friend stream. They can also not get notified unless they're near you, unless they're getting notified via your nearby notifications. But if they go to your user page, they can still see your stuff. The reason why that works that way is because it really wouldn't make sense for them, you know, for us to like basically block them from seeing that stuff, because all they would have to do in order to get around that is to just, you know, go and log out, and then they could still see your stuff. And that's assuming all your stuff is in public mode. Obviously, if you're in private mode, and you set your stuff up so that only your friends can see stuff, then if you ignore their request, they're obviously not a friend of yours, and so they get to see what everybody else sees, which would be not very much, depending on your privacy settings, if you're in private mode.
Cool.
Hey, can I ask one quick question? It's actually, it might end up being a feature request, and you guys can maybe say if this is something that's planned or not, but this is specifically related to the iPhone app, because as we're talking about privacy and adding friends and getting requests and things like that, one feature I find very useful, because I get a lot of people who listen to my show wanting to follow me, and then just random people who might be wanting to follow me because they've seen me in the area or something like that. And I want to treat those people differently, you know, based on my privacy settings. And so something that I use on the web app all the time that I can't seem to find in the iPhone app is when someone is requesting friendship, the ability to view their profile right from the sort of request friendship. So I usually drill down, and that way I can see, oh, they're a Mac, you know, the person's into Macs, you know, some information about their profile, the places they've been, and then I can kind of determine how to treat them. Do you know, is that something that you can do in the iPhone app and I'm just missing it, or is that maybe a planned feature?
It's kind of like an oversight in the current version, because you're absolutely right. You know, if you're browsing your friend requests, you should obviously be able to see more than just, you know, a little picture and maybe their username in order to decide, you know, whether you want to actually accept the request or not. And currently, you cannot click on the user himself to get more information, and that's going to be rectified in the upcoming update.
The good news is there's an easy workaround, because Mobile Safari is very good, and you guys have a very good iPhone version of your website. And so I just usually pop over there and approve my friends there rather than from the built-in app. So it's nice to have options, you know, on a device like the iPhone.
Yeah, we you know, it's in the current version that's currently out there, and we sometimes have trouble actually remembering what that's like, because we've actually been using you know, beta builds of the new stuff for a little while now. So we sometimes forget, someone gripes that the current users might have. That version definitely has had certain problems, such as the one that you mentioned, you know, that are you know, big oversights on our part. And I think part of the reason for that was that we really, really wanted to get that app out there, and we had so many people were just like telling us, just release it, you know, don't care, you know, if that's not there yet and all that stuff. So
I'm guilty of that.
We felt that it was good enough to release it, that's why we're about to release this update, which is just going to add a lot of polish to the existing functionality.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
Great. And where can people go to request feature updates or feature requests?
We like to point people to our Get Satisfaction site. It's if you log into BrightKite on the web, there's a feedback link in the top right hand corner. If you click on that, it will take you to a site called GetSatisfaction.com, and we have a presence on that site. And you can, you know, tell us about feature requests that you might have, about ideas. You can tell us about, you know, potential bugs that you might have found, and so on. And we tend to be pretty responsive on that. And we're definitely looking at all of that stuff, and all that stuff flows into our decision-making process as to, you know, what new features we're working on. So definitely check that out, because that's really our main feedback conduit.
Great. And you guys gave me a special link. So if anybody who's listening doesn't have a Brightkite account right now, you can bypass the invite problem. You don't have to get an invite, I should say. And if you click that special link that I will be putting in the show notes for this episode, so you can check out iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. And I will have that link in there so you can get signed up for Brightkite right away. So if there are no more questions, I'll thank you guys for joining us. We really, really appreciate it. We love Brightkite.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for using Brightkite.
Yep. See you guys. Take care.
Thanks.
Yep.
Bye. Bye.
All right. So, of course, you can get the Brightkite application in the App Store. It's free. You need an account for Brightkite. And, yeah, use that special link if you don't already have an account. It's great. So, moving on to some actual iPhone news. Let's talk about the new iPhone ads that just recently came out. The one that I was really excited about was the Shazam ad. Basically, it features the Shazam application, which, of course, lets you hold up your phone to any audio source, and it'll identify, usually, what the music is. And the ad really is, have you ever found yourself, wondering what the song is it's playing? And it just kind of shows them taking the Shazam app, holding it up to a speaker that's, playing, I guess it's the theme song for the ads, and it identifies what it is, and it tells you, and it's a very, very cool ad, and I've heard some responses from various people who actually watch the ad, and, some people who don't have an iPhone, and they think, wow, that's really, really cool. And I actually remember seeing an ad for a phone a while ago before the iPhone that kind of did the same exact thing, but I'm sure it wasn't as slick as this. So, and I think there was also a commercial showing the Looped application.
Yeah, but we won't talk about that.
We're not going to talk about Looped. so what do you guys think? Are these ads effective? Are they getting the word out? Do you think they're getting people interested in the iPhone and actually selling phones, or do we, what does Apple need to attract new iPhone users? Because, it seems like most people know about the iPhone.
I think to a certain degree, these ads are really for developers and building the developer community.
You think they're more just incentive for the developers and saying, "Oh man, we got to make a really great application."
To some degree, to some degree, I think they're probably also a response to the G Phone is out there now, and they have their own app marketplace and stuff like that. So, Apple wants to get the message out and show, "Hey, look at all the stuff the iPhone can do. This is really cool third party apps that are already out here. They're already developed. They're ready to grab." So they are highlighting some of the cooler features of the iPhone and some of the capabilities and some of the kind of hipper apps.
Yeah.
A couple things frustrate me about it, because it really throws off the, this is probably just my thing, because we, like on this show, are living and breathing these apps each and every day. So, I'm on top of what all these great apps are. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who've never come across these before, but it suddenly, you notice right after these ads start running, the top apps on the App Store, they all start showing up at the top of the list, which is, I'm sure, great for the developers, which brings it back to what I was saying. But I think to a certain degree, part of it's to excite and add excitement to the developer community, saying, hey, look, there's these cool apps, and hey, yours might be, you write a cool app, you might even be featured in an Apple ad. So there's kind of that little enticement out there.
Certainly. I think that, I talked to my dad who has an iPod Touch, the first generation, and, whenever I see him, I say, have you paid your $10 yet and, grab the update, because you can do all these things. And every time I see him and I tell him this, I say, check out this application that, you could get on there. Because right now, one of the things that he really needs is a grocery list, or just a list of, things to do, that kind of thing. And right now, I thought it was very cool of him when, obviously when the App Store wasn't there, he took a contact and just kind of made a contact be his, you know, I think he named it like triple A grocery list or something like that. So it was at the top, and then he could go in there and edit the notes. And then, you know, whenever he, you know, bought whatever he was supposed to buy, he would, you know, hit the delete key and get rid of that. And I say, well, you know, Dad, check this out. You can just get something where you just check it off. You can enter it in. It's really great. And it's specialized for that. And you can even get OmniFocus, and it'll be, you know, location-based and all of that. And he just says, I don't know. So I think that, you know, I guess obviously the point of these ads is not so much to just say, hey, check it out, iPhone. It's awesome. I think it's more so to say, you know, you thought that the iPhone was great. It's a great phone. It's a really cool phone. It can do all these things, you know, just out of the box. But it's also got the power of the App Store, which means you can grab new applications that don't come with it that are you know, very specialized for things such as, you know, identifying music, which is something a lot of people would be very interested in. And you know, I'm not sure that people truly understand the fact that these are third-party applications that you can get, although it may not be that relevant because they're just seeing, oh, you can do that with the iPhone. You can just do so much with the iPhone. You know, that it can just do anything, you know, as long as it's, you know, developed for the iPhone. As far as an application, it can.
Yeah,
do
as
so
long
much.
As Apple says it's okay.
As long as Apple says it's okay. So we're not going to see quick on the we're not going to see a quick commercials very soon, but you know, I think it's Apple's. I think they're definitely trying to get the word out on the fact that you can just grab so many different specialized applications for many different tasks. So, and I think, you know, of course they show the loop too. So I think the Shazam and the looped ads are obviously for, you know, people who, you know, younger people, I guess I would say, who, you know, would be interested in that. I know my father doesn't care about, you know, knowing where his friends are, you know.
Yeah, so, don't forget about Urban Spoon. And
yeah, there is the Urban Spoon.
Yeah.
And the, and what were the other,
I think there's the baseball, the MLB app, the baseball app. Or
right,
yeah. So I guess so. That kind of brings me into the next thing that we were going to talk about. According to J.D. Power and Associates 2008 Business Smartphone Consumer Satisfaction Study, and I think I shortened that actually. It's a mouthful. The iPhone outranks the BlackBerry in spite of its lack of a physical keyboard, which was originally thought to be a deal breaker for business users and enterprise users, because it doesn't, you know, the physical keys were thought to be, you know, the superior thing. And of course, we're seeing with the BlackBerry Storm that, you know, BlackBerry is kind of, you know, going with the idea that, okay, maybe that's not a big deal. So we're seeing that business users are really enjoying the, you know, the iPhone now, and they're much more satisfied with it than the BlackBerry. And I know why, because the iPhone's better. But what does Apple need to do to get into into the business market even further? You know, obviously they have all this enterprise stuff as far as, you know, hooking up to you know, Microsoft Exchange for your contacts and all that, you know, push email and that kind of stuff. You know, what does the BlackBerry have besides the keyboard, you know, that the iPhone doesn't? What do you, I think it's you know, the one thing that comes to mind would be access to you know, to be able to actually edit, you know, Excel and Word files and that sort of thing. Is what kind of stuff does Apple need to do to expand their presence in, you know, for business users?
I can tell you exactly what they need to do, and it has nothing to do with the software or the hardware that's involved in the iPhone. That part is completely irrelevant. What Apple needs to do is prove to the business market, to the enterprise market, that they're not going to flake out, that they're going to be there long term, and they're going to be committed to making products and supporting those products in the way that the enterprise needs. And to date, Apple has never done that.
Right.
Yeah. Related to that, Jeff's right on the money. Related to that, though, they also really need to step up, and they've never done this before. This is the same problem they've had with their XServe market. They really need to step up and target and go after, and more importantly, really support IT managers and IT people, the people that actually have to stand behind these things. So it's one thing when the CEO gets excited and wants an iPhone, but the IT guy is the guy at the end of the day that has to make this thing work and has to make it work on his network, and it has to be easy to use. And I don't know if you guys have tried, but Apple has a tool for like managing multiple iPhones in a business enterprise environment.
Yeah, I have checked that out. It's a very, very cool tool.
I was looking at you can even like load in like security certificates, and there's some pretty advanced stuff in there.
Yeah, I wrote up.
Need to do more like that, but beyond that, more promoting it and helping, you know, IT managers know how to use those tools. Sorry if I think I might have cut somebody off there.
That's fine. I was just talking. you're fine. I was just going to say that I was writing up a tip regarding one of the accent characters. If you know, you have that as a password in a Wi-Fi, as a Wi-Fi password, you can't type that with the iPhone keyboard, and that's something that, you know, someone brought up to me, and someone sent in that, you know, you can obviously type that on your keyboard, you know, on your computer's keyboard. So using that tool, you can make a profile, you know, just a little configuration file with that, you know, the correct password in there with that special character, send that off to your iPhone using that tool. And then there you go. You can, you know, log into that special, special Wi-Fi area. And, you know, it's got a lot of really cool little goodies in there as far as you can, you know, obviously set up multiple iPhones. That's the idea with it, but you can, you know, throw on, you know, whatever applications you want. You can, you know, set up multiple passwords for Wi-Fi and, you know, turn specific things off and add extra, you know, little, configuration things, stuff that, you know, you wouldn't want to have to do manually on the iPhone for each iPhone. So that's very cool. And, you know, they're definitely trying to get into the business market, and I think that, you know, with the iPhone, it's pretty difficult to start ignoring as they kind of did you know, with their servers. And I think that they got rid of the they got rid of the XServe raid. Is that right?
They did. That broke my heart.
It did
that
too.
That was a kick ass raid.
I would never get one because I can't afford it, but I always liked looking at it on the page.
Well, they also had the product manager, somebody, leave recently, and they're not replacing him. Also,
yeah, well,
doesn't bode well for their enterprise offering.
Yeah, well, there you go. And that's going to make it tougher for companies to feel comfortable adopting the iPhone en masse when they see the people that are heading up these divisions leaving and they're not being replaced.
Yeah, that's a little difficult. But yeah, like I was saying, it's kind of difficult to ignore, you know, the business market with you know, something like a phone, because it's just such an obvious market. It's such a big market, especially, you know, having BlackBerry being such a huge player in that. So I think that, yeah, Apple, you know, I think that's why we're seeing so much more adoption of the iPhone, you know, in the business market right now, you know, as opposed to, you know, XServes and that sort of thing. Aside from that, do you think that, you know, Apple needs to add any more software to the iPhone as far as, you know, being able to edit the, you know, the Word and Excel files? Because I know there are a lot of, you know, people who rely on that that feature. Or do you think they're going to start, you know, letting third-party developers kind of pick up that slack?
That's coming from third-party developers. Actually, just this came up as a subject on my show 2 episodes ago. And so I started poking around and doing some research, and I guess there's a couple companies doing it. The one everybody seems to be excited about is DataViz.
Yep.
Right.
I don't know, Michael, if you know. I'm pretty sure Jeff probably remembers, but DataViz used to be in the business of providing all these document translators back in the good old OS 8, OS 9 days, right?
Actually, I think they still are.
Are they still doing that?
Yeah.
Yes, they have all these great translators to translate, you know, Word documents to WordPerfect documents to, you know, AppleWorks documents or whatever. It's was really awesome software, and I haven't used it in a while, but it's good to hear they're still out there. But I guess they're developing an iPhone app that'll let you edit Word and Excel and files like that. Before we get too far away from it, though, I do want to just clarify the facts on that story. So the guy who's leaving is the Senior Vice President of Enterprise Sales, Al Shipp. And that was actually covered on a piece on the Mac Observer. What do you know?
Yes, it was.
Brian Chafin, right?
Yep, our illustrious publisher and editor at large. And because I drafted him into the position, now our afternoon editor too.
Great.
Cool. But anyway, that's the guy that's leaving the enterprise section and isn't going to be replaced.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird one. And As soon as that info showed up, I thought, yeah, that's going to be another problem for IT departments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's move on to the upcoming iPhone software update, version 2.2.
Have we heard enough about it already? Can we either have it or move
on? It's coming Friday, supposedly. That's the rumor that we're going to get it.
Oh, really? Okay. Now I'm excited again.
There you go.
Oh, well, great. And what, they're going to give us ponies too? Because I believe Apple's going to send us all ponies just as much as I believe we'll actually see the update when all the rumors say. And until it really comes out, I'm not buying it.
You know, that ponies with a PW?
Yes, most likely.
Wah, wah. Yeah, so now for some reason I do believe the rumors. The rumor mill has been really on top of this stuff, and I think there were a few rumored software updates as far as I think it was like 1.1.3 back in the day. I don't think there was an actual release date specified for that, but there were definitely leaks as far as features and stuff like that. So I'm gonna say that I believe what the rumors are saying as far as it coming on Friday, or maybe that's just wishful thinking because I'm really excited about the Google Street View. What else is in there? Public transportation directions, walking directions, emojicons.
That's pretty much the Google update.
Yeah,
the Google. Update.
So it can compete successfully with the Android.
With the Android.
Yep.
Yeah, it's the Android maintenance update.
So what are the odds that someone at Apple saw this rumor and then sent out a memo that said, okay, so we're planning on releasing this update on Friday, but now the rumor mills have it, so screw it. We're gonna do it on Tuesday instead.
Oh, see, I'm
like
taking
tomorrow?
Off tomorrow.
Yes.
I'm taking tomorrow
off.
No,
like make off. You wait over the weekend
to make us wait until Tuesday.
Now that, right.
That'll be unfortunate. No, I'll be staying up the, until I get it. Friday morning I'll wake up, and if I don't get it, by the time it's, time to go to bed, I'm just going to be sitting there on guard waiting for it to come out because, I got to type that out.
But I'm going to declare every update from now until it has copy paste a crappy update.
Are we gonna no? Okay, so I'm gonna say
officially.
I'm gonna call
the
my
crappy update and the crappier update, and until it has copy paste.
I'm gonna call the crappy update identifier the push notifications, because at this point I don't care about copy paste until I get my push notifications. That to me is a lot more relevant.
So your battery can die even faster.
I don't think it'll die even faster because it's part of Apple's thing.
When BrightKite's notifying you
every two seconds.
Yes.
Well,
let's see how it goes.
You got to remember we don't have a lot of people here in the area, so it won't be that big of a problem for you. Maybe it will be.
Okay, so when BrightKite and Twitter and AIM what else? Google Calendar and iCal. Well, iCal. Yeah, and...
Yeah, the Twitter thing is going to really kill it for me. Twitter and AIM, because I'm always on AIM.
Well, you got to figure it'd be the same as if you had everything be pushed through SMS. And, I do that, and I haven't really noticed a difference between when I have everything turned on and when I have everything turned off.
Are you on a first gen or a 3G?
I'm on a 3G.
Really? Yeah. I mean, even on my first gen, I've had to turn off pretty much everything that's push related to email, because it would just, my battery would not last a day. And I've heard it's worse on the 3G, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think the update kind of helped out with that a little bit. I haven't been, having as much of a problem with my 3G since that. I guess it was the 2.1 update that really helped everything out. Maybe need to bring it to the Genius Bar and say, hey, my battery life is crap. Get me another one.
Maybe. No. I might need to try it again. I don't know if I have tried it since the more recent update. I mean, and keep in mind, I'm complaining it just wouldn't last a day, whereas without push turned on or without it, pushing very heavily, my iPhone goes, longer than a day, probably a day and a full evening. So
see, now that's interesting. I've never... a full evening, you mean? Yeah. See, I've never had it actually.
Like overnight. So if I forget to dock my iPhone, it'll go for 24 hours plus, another over overnight, so another 12 hours. So what's that, 24, 36 hours?
Yeah, I hardly ever, you know, go without, you know, docking my phone. In fact, if I if I travel somewhere, I'll make sure that I at least have a USB cable, or, you know, it's pretty easy to find a, you know, a 30-pin dock connector and you know, someone's computer or something like that. And, you know, because everybody has an iPod and, you know, and then it just draws, you know, power from the USB connector. So that's pretty handy. But, you know, I hardly ever get, you know, a full, you know, 24-hour use out of the iPhone, right, unless I...
My lifesaver is the... and now I'm blanking on the name, of course.
The juice pack?
The juice pack, yeah, absolutely. And I've heard a lot of people who are really also liking the Richard Solo device, although I don't know if I could get around something hanging off the end of my iPhone. I just keep thinking I'm going to slam it on something or...
And break it off or something.
Crunch it in the bag or something, and it's going to break the...
Yeah, well, we're going to try and get one. We're going to try and get one and do a review of that, because that's, I've heard a lot of people talking about that too, and I think
a lot of people really like it. Yeah,
I'll throw it out there. InCase just announced that they're going to start shipping a new version of the slider that actually has a battery integrated into it. I think they're going to start shipping that next week sometime. So it's just a really, really fat version of the slider, and it's pretty interesting. Go check it out at, I think it's goincase.com. So there's that plug. Hopefully we'll get one, soon to try out and review. So let's see. AT&T's iPhone tethering plan details have been leaked, supposedly.
Yeah, speaking of sticking things in the bottom of your iPhone.
So, the plan, according to MacBlogs.com, excuse me, we'll get a 5 gigabyte data cap every month, just like the BlackBerry plan. And then at that point, AT&T will actually just turn off your tethering connection, you know, if you've used too much bandwidth, so you won't get overage charges. It's going to cost $30 a month, just like, you know, the current plans for other phones. It's, from what I'm seeing, it says initial connection through iTunes. It, you know, I'm not sure if that'll be that, you know, every time you want to tether your phone, you have to actually have iTunes open or something like that. That would make sense, you know, especially for Windows users, just simply because Apple doesn't have as much control over the operating system, and parameters if you're, you know, on Windows as opposed to being on a Mac. So, you know, having it go through iTunes, it'd be interesting. I mean, iTunes already does so much. Why not have it, you know, be an application that serves as a router too? So, it'll also have, you know, the expected speeds as far as, you know, 3G. You'll get a, you know, 1,000K download, you know, over Edge, maybe 110K download. yeah, you won't be able to get an unlimited bandwidth plan. They'll tell you to get a PC card, and no idea on the launch date. So that's what we have as far as the plan leaked, the plan details. What do you guys think? Is this... I mean, it kind of sucks that we're going to have to, if you want the tethering, you'll have to pay an additional $30 to your already supposedly unlimited data plan for your phone. So you're kind of paying for the same thing twice, even though you're using the same device to get on the internet. What do you guys think? Is this?
I guess it sucks if you didn't grab NetShare while you had a chance, huh?
Yeah, definitely. Well,
you know, I'm wondering if Apple's going to kill NetShare.
I know.
After the tethering plan.
I'm very worried, actually, that will be the first app to show up on that blacklist.
That would really torque me.
Definitely.
But yeah, I mean, literally, NetShare, tethering is a great thing because, you know, and I think it's a needed thing for a lot of people. You were talking about business users earlier. You know, in a pinch, when you don't have an open Wi-Fi, it's invaluable. I just had a meeting just last week, and we were in a space and it didn't have open Wi-Fi, and I was like, well, what am I going to do? And I said, thank God I've got NetShare. And I think I even Twittered about it, because it was like, this is awesome. And it actually performed very, very well. I've had issues, little issues with NetShare in the past, sort of dropping. So, you know, NetShare's a little kludgy. It's never going to get an update. So having something official, I think, that works and works reliably is probably worth $30 to a number of people.
You know, and considering what AT&T's tethering plans are for other phones, this falls in line with that. So even though this is a rumor, and everyone needs to keep in mind this is just a rumor right now, this probably is pretty much in line with what's really going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. You know, of course, AT&T really wouldn't feel compelled to offer it unless they can make some money off of it.
Yeah,
I mean, really, and they think,
and I mean, they really did. Have you guys been using this the open Wi-Fi, the hotspots? I've been using that like crazy too. And I mean, that being opened up is great. And they did
definitely,
you know, for free. So
yeah,
you know, you can't fault them too much. They got to make some money somewhere. So if you can't get near an AT&T Wi-Fi hotspot and 3G's not working for you, well, I guess we're talking about laptops here. So
yeah, if you're not near a Starbucks or a McDonald's, you know, you're pretty far out there.
You know, I guess
you're out by where Michael lives, apparently.
I'm speaking out of turn because I'm getting mixed up with the iPhone, and this is laptops. So does anybody know? I haven't tried this. People have been telling me that there might be some tricky ways to get your laptop to commandeer that open Wi-Fi connection, or is that something you can just get?
I haven't tried it yet, but Jeff had the marvelous idea of, you know, going on your iPhone and requesting the requesting the access, and then, you know, with the text message that you actually have to click before that works, just simply, you know, copy that URL into your browser on your computer and then see if that works. I haven't tried that yet, Jeff. Have you tried that yet?
I haven't tried that yet.
I've tried it. It actually only works if you've got your user agent on your browser set to be Mobile Safari on iPhone.
Oh, yeah. Well, that works. Well, okay, so awesome. So here's how you do that. If you're on Leopard, I believe it. This only works. Well, maybe later versions of Safari. But the way you do it to change your user agent, just so everybody knows, you go into Preferences for Safari, hit Advanced. Down at the bottom, you'll have a checkbox. Check the box next to Show Develop Menu in Menu Bar. Then go to the Develop menu, and then under User Agent, you know, choose, what is it, Mobile Safari? Where is that? Yep, Mobile Safari for iPhone, I guess. And so that works, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
The one thing that I wish that they really would fix is that you don't have to request a message via SMS, because the Starbucks where I would normally be is one that's located inside of a Barnes & Noble here in town, and that place is a bomb shelter, so I have to... go in, get on the Wi-Fi, request the link, go outside, wait until I get the text message, and then go back inside.
Now, you say that you have to switch it over to Mobile Safari. Can, like, I'm thinking you'll run into problems if you go to Facebook.com, or can you switch it back once you've validated your computer?
You know, I haven't tried that. I would imagine that it would just not respond if you're not on that user agent.
Interesting.
But
we should run more experiments.
Yeah, I'll give it a try this week.
Testing.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that and get back to you.
Yeah. And Michael, on browsers prior to or on versions of the OS prior to Leopard, there is a terminal command you could find.
Yeah, you can definitely use a terminal command. So if you go, you know, just run a Google search for develop mode in Safari, you'll figure that out.
Or there is a great control panel app called Secrets.
There,
from Blacktree. I think it's the same guy who did Quicksilver.
Yep.
And it has not only Safari, you know, things that you can turn on, extra features, but
you can
library.
You can really ruin your computer with that very quickly.
Yeah, be careful, but yeah, you can flip the bit using that if you want more of a GUI tool. But yeah, it's a dangerous app, but I love it still.
Yeah, I use it all the time. Okay, Jeff, you wanted to? I think I heard you chime in there. Maybe someone else.
You guys hit what I was going to cover. So go team.
Okay. Go team. All right. So moving on. Do we want to talk about the App Store getting advanced sorting options? I guess this is kind of in our 2.2 discussion. We've seen some more screenshots. I think this is from Boy Genius Reports. Basically, we're going to get some pretty advanced sorting options in the upcoming App Store in 2.2. We'll be able to search, sorted by top paid, top free, date, that kind of thing. I think we're bringing back some of the stuff that they lost or took out of the App Store, as well as now we'll be able to see multiple app screenshots with the 2.2 update. Now, do you guys think this is going to, you know, help the App Store as far as, you know, browsing it on the iPhone? And what do you guys think of, you know, as far as, you know, what Apple needs to do to fix the App Store, you know, in general, as far as additions or what have you?
You know,
I think it'd be nice. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no problem. Okay. I think that anything that they add in that makes it easier for users on the go to figure out what different applications are, it will make it easier overall to sell those products. So if these are features that really are going to show up, then I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously the one screenshot thing is kind of an annoying thing because, a lot of times it'll be just like a splash screen for the application and, who cares about that? But still the App Store, they've been improving it over time. Do you guys see anything obvious that Apple should do to, as far as, make it more useful?
I think video might help. I mean, would allow little, 10-second, 20-second, 30-second video clip, the developer to put something like that together, a little screencast.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Capture it on the iPhone. I guess the same way we all do now, which is point a video camera at the iPhone screen, or at least even better yet, it'd be great if they gave a little video capture app to the developers and built that into the tool set. I haven't seen the back-end tool set that Apple gives developers for posting stuff. Another nice thing would be if you could do that, and I don't know, maybe this is part of that sorting. I didn't see the screenshots, but if you could do the sorting within a category. You can do that?
Yep. Yeah, you can just like tap on social networking, hit, top paid, top free, or release date.
Is that already in there? Am I just clueless?
I think that's going to be new for the
update. Oh, it will be new. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I think that's going to be very, very beneficial.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, yeah. So I really like the idea of video. That's one of the big things. I've decided to start doing that with the reviews on the site, actually. So we're going to start throwing throwing videos in there for various reviews. So that'll be fun.
Another one that I find helpful, like on Amazon and stuff like that. And I don't spend a ton of time in the App Store. So if this is totally in there already, I'm an idiot. But the ability to see reviews by star rating, because I usually like to look at the fives and then look at the ones and kind of compare and contrast. So to be able to filter down and just look at, ratings within it rather than, hey, there's 300 ratings for this app.
Yeah, definitely. That would be very beneficial for sure. So do we want to talk about the iPhone as far as a gaming platform? I think Steve Jobs mentioned something about it being
about it being a awesome gaming platform.
Yeah, do we want to talk about that? I think it is, definitely.
Yeah, I think I do. I mean, I love it as a gaming platform, but probably because I'm more of a casual gamer. I think it's an awesome casual gaming platform. I think some people are pushing it to be more than that. I think didn't I see a report this week? Something saying that like Sega, it's like their most successful platform right now in terms of a mobile platform for Sega games.
I hadn't heard that. That sounds great.
Huh. Yeah, I haven't heard that either. But you know what? I agree with you, and I hadn't put my finger on it till you said it. This is an awesome casual gaming platform, and that's exactly how I use my iPhone when I'm gaming. I need to kill a few minutes, and so I just pick one of the games and play it, and then I'm off to the next thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the fact that it has, all of these sensors built into it, and we just had the Google app come out, and we'll talk about that in a second, but it makes use of the actual proximity sensor in the phone, so you just hold it up to your ear and it, figures out that, you're holding it up to your ear and it's going to start recording. You can do things like for example, the game Scoops, which I get made fun of for using. but it's just basically you move your phone back and forth, and you're controlling a little ice cream cone, and you want to get as many scoops of ice cream on the cone as you possibly can, and just moving it back and forth, and it's a really great casual game, like you guys said. There's just so cool how you can interact with software on this device. You can interact with it directly as far as a touch screen. You can move it around, and you can, even with other applications, it makes use of the microphone. It's just great. I think it's setting some new standards for being able to interact with software.
Yeah. Have you tried Topple?
I have. Yeah.
Yeah. Scoops reminded me of Topple. I've tried that and it's great. It's like, it's kind of like a strange version almost of a Tetris where you have these different shaped blocks and you've got to use the accelerometer to kind of balance and create a huge tower. It reminds me of being a kid when you try to build the biggest tower of blocks and they're kind of wobbling and you're trying to hold them still. And then stuff's all sliding off and stuff. And it's great. I mean, it's an app I can pop open. I can play, one level for just a few minutes and then kind of get out of. So that's what I mean by casual gaming as well. But I don't know. There's some guys I know who are pretty hardcore gamers who are impressed with it compared to, they have a DS or a PSP or something like that. And they're saying it, a lot of the games rank right up there in terms of quality and playability and all the other factors.
Yeah.
I think even just this week, we're starting to see some multi-user online kind of gaming type elements coming to the iPhone. And I think that kind of stuff is going to take it to a whole nother level as well.
Yeah, definitely. I was just kind of getting into Google Mobile app. I almost totally forgot about it. This is an application that's been out for the iPhone for a while. It's just simply, it's kind of an interface. It's like... Yeah, it's like the Google desktop application for the iPhone. And the reason it's relevant now is because they just released a new version with voice commands integrated in there. So you can, you open the application and, say you're in the car or something like that and you want to do a quick Google search, without even touching the phone, you don't have to hit record or anything. You simply, hold it up to your ear. It knows that you're holding it up to your ear and you're ready to say something. It'll make a noise. You tell it what you want to search for, and then you take it away from your ear, and it'll run that search for you. So that's really the highlight of that update is that you can search for anything just by using just by telling it what you want to search for. Have you guys played with the application yet?
I've had a chance to download it, but I had to plug my microphone in so we could podcast, and so I haven't synced it yet.
Yeah, I haven't tried it out yet. I have updated, but I've had the Google app for a while. To be honest, I don't use it all that much because I have several other apps that kind of do similar things.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. That's kind of a secondary pick, I guess we're going to say, because I haven't had a whole lot of time to play with it either. So it's free. You can grab it from the App Store. So it's, if you don't have it already, it's Google Mobile app. Check that out.
We're bad podcasters.
We are bad podcasters.
Very bad.
Sorry,
bad,
folks. Bad. Come back next week.
We'll have it together next week, we promise.
Yeah, and it'll sound like we totally know what we're doing.
I think we're just going to do this thing again. Different. We're going to be talking about different things and, kind of winging it with different stuff and saying the same thing. So there you go.
Okay.
That works.
Well, at least we know what to expect. And it'll be comfortable for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yep, very comfortable. So let's move on to our iPhone picks. But before we do that, we have to talk about our sponsor, Audible. They are the provider. They're such a great provider of audiobooks and different things. They also do, speeches, stuff like that. They're provided for free. So they gave the acceptance speech for Obama. They put that out there. I think they put some of the debates up there too for free. But Audible, of course, they have over 50,000 titles, audiobooks read professionally. They're great, great books. They sound wonderful and they work on a whole slew of different devices. So you can, listen to it on your iPhone. You can listen to it on your iPod, nearly any MP3 player. Of course you can check out, the compatibility on their site, and you have to make sure that, the DRM will work on there. You can listen to it on iTunes, iPod, iPhone, all that. So I'm going to pick a book this week. Last week, I think I did 1984. This week, I want to talk about a book by John Hodgman, The Areas of My Expertise. If you don't know who John Hodgman is, he's the PC in the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC ads. And it is it's a fantastic book. Have you guys read The Areas of My Expertise? Either of you?
Listened to it on Audible.
Yeah, listen to it on Audible. It's how does he describe it? As an almanac of all knowledge or something like that?
Yep. It's his own personal. His personal almanac of all things.
Yeah. So
and it's important to remember that in addition to playing the PC character on Apple's ads, he's also the resident expert on The Daily Show.
Yes.
So, so that gives him the qualifications to produce a book like this.
Yeah. So, when I say it's an almanac of, all knowledge, it's really kind of skewed and warped and, his own interpretation of things. So you're probably...
Oh, it's all made up.
There you go.
Wait, what?
We're not going to dance around it. It's totally
it's
made
up.
I mean,
he admits it in the thing. It's all his made-up stuff.
Crap.
Oh, sorry, Jeff. You thought it was all fact. Yeah. So no,
I've been taking notes and everything.
You were getting ready for the test.
I was.
So no, it's a fantastic book. It's very, very funny. If you're looking for something casual and very entertaining, John Hodgman, The Areas of My Expertise, it's fantastic. In fact, Jonathan Colton, accompanies him as he reads the book throughout the entire thing. It's absolutely hilarious. And at the end, well, he does mention at some point that included on I think the 700th CD of the audiobook that he has the list of, I think it's 700 hobo nicknames.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was I thought, oh, that's funny. He's talking about that. But actually, the very last chapter is I think it's an hour long chapter, and it is him reading every one of the 700 hobo nicknames, accompanied by Jonathan Colton. And I asked Jonathan when I saw him at New Media Expo, and he did in fact play for an hour, behind John Hodgman as he read all these. So it's so funny. You should if you want to get something casual and funny as your first free audiobook, you can do that. The Areas of My Expertise. If you sign up, audiblepodcast.com/iPhone, you get a free audiobook. You can get that book or any one of the 50,000 titles. I think a majority of them only require one credit, but this book definitely only needs one credit. So go there and try it out. Support us by supporting Audible. So that's audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. And with that, let's move on to our iPhone picks. Jeff, have you decided on an iPhone pick this week?
I have, and I'm hoping it's not one that someone has picked before. And if it is, it's okay. I'll come up with something else. But my pick today is Say Who.
Okay.
Which?
What?
Has anyone done that one yet?
I don't think so.
Okay, cool. All right, so Say Who is a cool little application that lets you talk to your iPhone and tell it who you want to call. So it's that voice recognition for voice dialing that we've been wanting. And you can pick it up as a third-party application now. And it works really cool. I mean, I can tell it the name and then the phone number or what type of phone I want them to call. So like if I was calling Michael and I wanted to have his cell phone dialed, I could just say Michael Johnston, mobile. And then it picks that number and dials it.
Awesome. How well does it work?
I have not had it fail on me yet.
Fantastic.
It's worked flawlessly, and I've been playing with it for like a week and a half now.
Now, do you think this is something that Apple should eventually add into the iPhone, or do you think they're just going to be lazy about it and let third-party developers continue filling that void?
I'd like to see Apple integrate something like this so that you don't have to launch another application just to dial your phone. But if this is how I'm going to have to deal with it and it works as well as Say Who does, okay, well, then I'll just live with it like that.
Yeah. Now, is that's free, right?
It was free. I think it's 99 cents now.
Okay. Well, that's totally worth it. If you get, voice dialing that works, then, Say Who, it's 99 cents, we believe, in the App Store. So check that out.
Now, let me correct myself. It is free.
It is free. Go get it right now. Is it promotional pricing or Does it say?
I don't know. It doesn't say. Okay. It just says it's free.
All right. Okay, great pick. Adam, do you have a pick
for
us? Yes.
I am going to pick the most expensive app I have ever picked on this show. But it's very, very cool. And I was a little bit hesitant to actually buy this app. But now that I have it, I it's probably one of my favorite apps I've ever seen on the iPhone. And it's called StarMap. So anybody who's into astronomy or just curious about astronomy or wants to know when you're looking up at the sky, what is that star right there? That's what this app does. It's a star map app. It's GPS enabled, location based, which is, I think, the first killer feature. And meaning that you turn it on, it will find your location and then also, you know, based on the time, show you the stars from any direction. So you can look north, south, east, west. You can scroll around with your finger. You can turn on and on the constellations, their names. You can use the common names. You can use the Latin names. Has a really cool feature where you can change the brightness of the stars. So if you're in an area where only the very brightest stars are visible, you actually bring up a slider and you can slide up and down the brightness so you can change the number of stars you see in the star field on the iPhone app. You can change the twilight, whether it's dark or light. It also has one of the coolest features. Just if you want to see a cool little navigation, you guys know how you have the little nav bar down at the bottom, you know, in the black, and there's usually four or five slots in most apps for different features going into the settings and things like that.
Yep.
This one on the side has a little rotator dial, and you can actually rotate the menu bar to get additional features.
Okay, so that's cool.
Yeah, so it's the first app I've ever seen that does that. So I don't know if this is a built-in interface thing or something custom to this app.
Sounds like a hack.
It's really cool though. So you just flip it over and it's like it's a, you know, a little cube or something, and it rotates and there's like, you know, four to the fourth power little menu items down there. It just has a ton of features. You can of course zoom in and out. You can touch constellations and it'll highlight them in the sky so you can find the patterns. You can touch specific planets or specific stars, and it'll give you additional information about the planets or the stars, including the name, their spectrum. It has all the galaxies. It has a really cool feature where it'll show you shooting star zones and the times. So it'll show you, you know, during this time period, there should be this many meteorites or shooting stars, and it's going to last for this long, and there's this many per hour. It's just incredibly full featured, and I was just blown away by it. It's well worth $11.99 if you're at all curious or interested in stars.
Cool. So that's StarMap, and $11.99 you said, right?
Yep.
Cool. All right, Omar, do you have a pick?
Yeah, you know I didn't, but I just thought about this about 5 minutes ago and how much I actually use this application called A Personal Assistant by a web service called Page Once. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. Pretty much I associate all of my credit card accounts and all this stuff that I shouldn't be giving out to anything like this. and you just launch this app and you get all your stats from all your credit cards, gift cards that you might have, I don't know, email addresses. And you can dig deep into each one of these accounts and see maybe your past transactions and stuff. And you can set notifications for all kinds of things, like if you're getting really close to your credit limit or if you've got a gift card maybe and you're running out of money on it. So you've got a Starbucks card and you've crossed the $5 mark and you've only got $5 left on it. It can send you notifications via email or SMS. And the amount of things that you can hook onto it is growing by the day, I guess. The bank at which I work and bank at, I guess, is actually on it as well, even though it's a pretty small bank for my city.
So it's called, is that a free application? Or?
Yeah, it's free.
It's called A Personal Assistant?
Right.
Okay, cool.
By Page Once.
All right, so
I got a little bonus tip on that one, real quick. I don't know if you guys know, but gift cards. If anybody's worried in this troubled economy, the FDIC just came out and they're going to be insuring gift cards now.
Ooh.
Oh, wow. Like
that's good.
Yeah. good or bad, depending on how you look at it. But yeah, the federal government is now backing your gift card. So if that company goes out of business, the federal government will give you your $100 back for your gift card.
That's good. An interesting idea that the government is helping out with that, but I think it'll help out more than it hurts, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your tax dollars at work.
Yeah. There you go. All right. So my pick is Ocarina. And so the guys at Smule say that it's the first real instrument for the iPhone, and I'm going to have to agree with them on that. Basically, Ocarina is it's a virtual ocarina flute for your iPhone. You can do you can just simply play the ocarina, and I have it hooked up. Maybe I can get it to work. Maybe I can't. Hang on. Huh. Okay, so it's not working at all.
You have to blow into the 30-pin dock connector. There you go. See?
Yeah, so you have to blow into it. So I'm not going to do that because you're getting a lot of wind noise. But yeah, you have four dots on the screen. You can hold down on them in any combination and play songs. It's very cool. So you can change the mode, the root of the instrument, and you can even check out because it's a social application. You can even pull up a globe and actually listen to other people playing around the world. And it shows that, you know, where they're coming from, and it, you know, also shows the notes coming up from there. So I should know how much this is. Omar, do you remember how much Ocarina is?
I believe it's $199.
$199. Totally, totally worth it, even if you just want to show it off to your friends. No, it's just 99 cents.
My bad.
And so, yeah, Ocarina. Grab it right now. It's a lot of fun. You'll probably end up feeling a little lightheaded after you start playing with it. The coolest part to Ocarina isn't necessarily the fact that, you know, it just exists and you can do it, but Smule has also taken the initiative to set up a community around the application. So it's ocarina.smule.com, and that it shows that in the application. If you go there, you can check out scores for different songs that people write. So, you know, you can check out, of course, for all you guys who just, you know, heard about it now and are thinking, oh, good, then, you know, I can be, I can relive The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time. They actually have that score on their website, so you can play the theme song to Zelda and learn that. And you can actually, there's a forum there, like I said, where people can post scores that they've cobbled together, and they actually have a score generator, so you can just go crazy with it. It's an actual instrument. It's very cool. Totally recommended. Go out, get it right now. Everybody should have it. It's even just to show it off, but it's a lot of fun to play with in your spare time as well. So 99 cents, the app is called Ocarina, and that is my pick.
You know what? I was totally joking and about blowing into it, but it says right there on the phone, you do have to blow it. You have to blow into the microphone.
Oh, yeah, you do. You blow into the microphone. I don't think I didn't mention that. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yep. And it even shows a little triangle, a little pointer that says, you know, blow into the microphone. So, you know, which one of the holes is the mic and which one is the speaker. So it'll come out of either the headphone jack or, you know, out of the speaker. So, yeah. So it's even got, I should mention, very cool, it even uses the accelerometer, so if you tip it up and down, it'll actually add vibrato to it, so that's cool too.
Nice.
Yeah.
People, the developers are amazing how they push this stuff. It just blows me away every time I see one of these things, so.
Yeah. All right, it is time to wrap it up here. Of course, you can check out iPhoneAlley.com for more news, tips, and reviews. If you want to share an iPhone tip with us, you found something cool, you can share that with us. We'll post it up there and share it with the rest of the iPhone community. You can click on the Contact Us link on the left-hand side of the page. And if you have a product or an application you'd like us to review, you can also use that contact link. We are currently doing a photo contest in our forums. So if you the only rule there is if you take a you just got to take a picture with your iPhone and submit it there, and we'll do some judging on it. So, you know, make it a really good picture. And I've seen a lot of very good pictures so far in that thread. So we'd love to see that. You, the prize is a Marware iPhone 3G case. So we'll put the link to that thread in the show notes. And of course, the show notes are at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. You can also get the iPhone picks that we give right there. So if you don't remember what we said, or if you're driving in the car and you want to check those out later, you can get that iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. If you have any feedback for us, you can send us an email at podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. And once again, Jeff Gamet is here from the Mac Observer. Thank you so much for being here, Jeff.
Well, thanks for having me on. As always, it's a blast. And hey, thanks for not kicking me off.
we love you here, Jeff. And
if you want to sweet,
if you want to stalk Jeff on Twitter, you can do that. twitter.com/jgamet. And of course, he's on Brightkite, so you can search for him there and get crazy stalker on him. And
sweet.
And, yep. And of course, Adam Christensen is here from the MacCast at MacCast.com and twitter.com/MacCast. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Oh, thanks as always for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yep. And Pilot Omar also is here. Thank you for, you know, being my co-pilot.
Always a pleasure, Michael.
Yep. And twitter.com/PilotOmar is his Twitter. And of course, my Twitter is twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And with that, another episode of the iPhone Alley podcast is out the door.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.